Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
Hey everybody, this is the Brothers Wiss number 65. Me, I am Greg Soule, coming here from Texas. Top left, we've got Justin Wilson from Indy. You have to say hello so they recognize
your voice. Howdy, howdy.
Most people aren't watching this, they're listening to it. Maybe for a little bit, we've got Thomas Kernack. He's currently in the middle of a power outage, so he's got nothing better to do than sit on here and talk with us.
Hello, everyone.
And then top right, we got Mike Hammett out of Chicagoland. What's up, Mikey?
Oh, just been fighting this weekend trying to set up PM accounting. I think that's how you say that package name. Doing some NetFlow stuff.
Yeah, I noticed that in the Slack, asking some different questions there. And speaking of the Slack, we have a Patreon-only Slack group, and not only is Mike getting help with that, let's see, what else? What other kind of nuggets were there? Steve Gilbert and Josh Reynolds had a spirited debate. It was going on for like an hour plus yesterday. And then it somehow devolved into... their spirited debate was over security practices, I'm sorry. And then, of like large companies and who can actually afford to protect your services and all that stuff. Very opinion laden. And then it devolved into talking about small Linux installs. I don't know how that ended up happening, but the sorts of things do. Let's see, Ryan McAfee and Michael Lingwall were talking about LMR applications. Jeremy and Thrift were talking about Ceph clusters and Proxmox, right? So there's a lot of really good stuff going on in there. And if you want to jump on, drop over to our Patreon, patreon.com/thebrotherswiss, join up. Let's see, what else do we have?
I noticed that you didn't mention my self-deprecation there.
Yeah. It was in there. Hang on just a second. Back. Yeah, I didn't mention that. Mike says that he's always asking for help of one kind or another. But, I mean, everybody does. I mean, that's what it's there for, right? It's the brain trust. One man can't know all things, but through the group, we are stronger. Add us all together, we might actually equal one normal man. So that's good. let's see.
I don't think you can add a bunch of degenerates and get one normal person.
I don't know. You just take the good bits. Take the normal bits out of there. You know what happens. You know, whatever makes it through the sifter that happens to be left over. So let's see. Some of the notes Mike put in or has been putting in the Facebook, right? All of those great notes come from him. Shinog is coming up in May. I think it's like May 10th, right? It's really soon. Tom Kopchinski. I met that guy at Nanog. Super cool cat. He runs the Shinog thing. Be sure to go and say hi to him. Some really good stuff. He's a super smart dude. He's way smarter than me. Let's see what else. Wisp America. Is that next week?
You have to leave tomorrow, right, Justin? Or no, I leave tomorrow, then we leave on Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
Okay. I'm just coming down to stay the place, probably at Scott's, so I'm not having to drive down there in the morning.
All right, and that one's in...
Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, edit that one out. Sorry, it's cold, making me do all kinds of crazy stuff. Anyway, yeah, so that one's in Birmingham, Alabama. You guys looking forward to anything in particular?
I don't know. I haven't had time to look at anything.
Yeah, I haven't had much time to look at anything either. Who is it? Mimosa's doing some secret announcement.
Oh, that's cool.
It's secret to some people.
Yeah.
It's a secret to me. I don't know. I'm not on the inside track.
It helps you just show up at their headquarters and say, hey, show me around.
Fair enough. All right, well, that's cool. Let's see what else we got. Mike posted before, OpenVPN is hard. I think it's actually not that bad. I did a video tutorial, my first one in 3 years. Somebody was happy to point out. I thought that was hilarious. So somebody's keeping track. I knew it was a long time. And I honestly, I want to get back into doing those because I actually really enjoy that. I'm just haven't made time. Everybody's got time for everything, right? Can you make time to do those things? To what end? I don't know.
I think what my problem with OpenVPN was that I, I looked at the guides and it was generate your CA, certificate authority on the MikroTik, and then do this. And I'm like, no, I don't want any of that self-certified stuff. I can spend $8 of a real certificate. Why would I do, $8 is not a lot of money to get a real cert. Why would I do that?
I don't know, because it takes
the next
30
day.
Seconds. Yeah, it takes 30 seconds to make a self-signed cert. That's why.
And then I ended up finding out through some conversation and whatnot that apparently, unless you're like a PKI expert, you just do the self-cert. Like, that's what they just took, just do that.
What were
Don't
you
bother
do-
with the others.
Were you doing it router to router, or was it like clients to router?
Client to router.
All right. Well, that's a little different.
Because my intention was, I wanted to create always on VPNs with laptops. One of my clients has a problem where one of their, road warriors never takes the laptop to a company location, ever. The laptop now belongs to somebody else I made an account, but because they're not on the domain, nobody knows a local admin password, they can't log into the machine. So it's just a brick. Because the old guys can, and we don't know his password, and can't. And if I reset it on the domain, I can't get in because you can't log into the computer. It was a big circle of you can't use the computer because you can't log into it, remotely. So I was trying to find ways of doing it always on VPN, and somebody said that the OpenVPN, Windows client sets up as a service. So then as soon as Windows kicks on, it establishes that VPN. And so that's where I go, trying to get that set up. And it was a drag, and then I ended up was it Riley Flattery from Wisconsin? I think I said his name right. It's not in front of me, I'm just guessing. He sent me a link to a Microsoft thread where basically the RASDIAL 32 or RASDIAL EXE in System 32, you can run that appended with the name of the VPN connection you've set up, appended with username and password, and then that will initiate that VPN connection. Where that's useful is you can set up a scheduled task that at startup it runs this. So then as soon as the system boots up, it establishes a network connection. And in the login screen, it will dial my, L2TP IPsec VPN. So I solved my problem without having to use OpenVPN. I'm sure if I were to go back and do it the way you're supposed to do it, it wouldn't be as, nearly as difficult. But, I've done it this other way, and so that's probably what I'll do.
Tyson, you got it working, and you'll probably never have to do it again, right?
Yeah, I'm going to end up rolling it out across all of their laptops just because, just for good measure, even the ones that are, in the area of, of the, offices. So then I went a couple steps beyond, and then I set up some persistent static routes. They call them persistent, but they're only persistent if the connection is actually up, which is good. If the VPN is up, then it'll send only certain, routes over the VPN. So that way it's not, shoving all of their, YouTube and Spotify and whatnot over the VPN and just chewing up time, on the VPN concentrator. Just sends the couple prefixes they need, and away we go.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever actually tried to do an always-on sort of connection. What does it do if it fails to connect? Does it attempt to reconnect at any point, or does it just try it once and give up?
Well, like in the VPN's setup, I had the box checked, if dropped, attempt to reconnect. But then I guess I never actually simulated what happens if it doesn't work right away. But I believe Task Scheduler has a built-in mechanism for, retrying if it misses the run, retrying if it fails. I would assume that we give some sort of, I can't even think of the name, the right term right now, but, exit code or whatever to, signify that it exited cleanly or that it exited with a failure. I assume something like that's happening. I guess I could set it up on another one and test it, see what happens.
I'm just curious. Might end up having to do some kind of scripting or something in there to check whether it's connected and then to retest, something like that. I'd probably rig something. These are all Windows machines, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could probably auto it something up. I've done that before plenty of times.
But then I think Windows 10, I think you just check a box now. It's just like... Yep, just uses VPN all the time. Okay.
Nice.
I haven't tried it, but I read that Windows 10, it was a lot easier. And if you have Server 2016, and you use the Microsoft routing and remote access functionality, which I'm always like, why would you run that? Apparently with it, you can do an always-on VPN thing set up via group policy and a bunch of other stuff. Down to, I think, Windows 7 and current clients. So they have some way of doing it.
Very nice. Let's see. What else do we have on the list? Unimus. Unimus has some US MUM vouchers. So go to unimus.net and bother Thomas about it. If he runs out at some point, then last I checked, Steve Disher at ISP Supply still had a few, so you could probably bug him.
So we actually also have some vouchers for the EU MUM as well. So US MUM, EU MUM, just let us know. We've got you.
Nice. Get in there. Get you some. Free is great. Yes, you probably get a lot more call for vouchers at the EU MUM than you do at the US MUM, right?
So actually, so far we've only given out a few vouchers. So there's still a bunch left.
There you go. Because if you sign up as a vendor, they give you X number of vouchers, I guess, with your vendor thing, right?
Yeah. If you get a booth, you get some free vouchers for, whoever you want to give them out to.
All right. So get in there and get you some. Or just register a whole lot of fake names and beards and mustaches. That'll work. Whatever the free thing is this year. Let's see what else we have. Siklu has some 70, 80 gigahertz gear. They're doing 10 gig wireless links. What say you guys about that?
It'll be interesting to see if it, if they can maintain a 10 gig link at, the modulation that they say. 80 gigahertz is pretty touchy. I mean, it doesn't take much to drop modulation at 80 gig.
What distances are they saying with these things? Are these just a few hundred meters sort of thing?
I haven't seen any claims, but Justin Miller just hopped on. Do you have some of the 5.5 gig Siklus going, or?
I do.
What sort of range do you get on those, and still maintain good modulation?
Surprisingly, pretty far. To be honest with you.
One 2 kilometer areas.
Oh yeah. One kilometer is no problem at all. You could do 2 as well.
We were talking about the 70, 80 gigahertz stuff that they are just talking about doing the 10 gig full duplex links with.
The 8010, yeah.
That's pretty.
Those look like just an upgraded version of the 5500.
They look fairly small in kind of the marketing slicks they've put together on them. So I'm guessing the range has to be pretty short. I mean, you're probably just hopping across the road on those things.
I think it's the same as the Etherhalls, what I've seen.
What would that be in your estimation for full modulation?
full modulation where it starts to drop off.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at the link calculator they have.
I don't want you to actually look at facts. I want you to just pull something out of your butt.
Well, I'm pulling up an 80 gig we have here. It's 1,871 meters. So whatever that works out to be. And it's a gig by gig. RSSI is neg 40 on one side, neg 42 on the other side. And that's pretty much target for that link. It's got a 3-foot dish on one side and a 2-foot dish on the other side. And it in rain it fades about 20 to 30 dB.
They have the EtherHall 8010 on the link budget calculator for Cichlid. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, with the introduction of EtherHall 8010. Market a very close, a very cost-effective 10 gig product. There,
I believe, like the 2.5 gig and the 5 gig radios are actually louder than their older, you know, 600 meg and 1 gig stuff, and so they can probably maintain that same higher modulations at the same distance as yours, Justin, because it's louder by
probably
3, 4, 5 dB.
Yeah,
these are.
They're saying combination of flexible high capacity with long
two
range.
2 kilometers, you're looking at 9,550 megabits, and then it starts dropping like 99% at 9,550, 99.9% at 9,550, and then it drops 9,995. So you would get full modulation, just not all the time. 99.9% of the time, you'd have full modulation.
Mm.
In K rain zone, where I'm at.
If you're looking for a more accurate way of determining your link's capability of handling rain, I just added to the show notes my Google Sheet that I've created. It does require you to know more than a couple things about your setup, but you fill in frequency, distance, transit power, antenna gains, and what your target receive signal is, as well as you pull some path loss information from one of the other sheets, and it will tell you how many inches of rain per hour you can take on that link before you break full modulation. Because those, like the, you know, I don't think the ITU, rain region stuff is really all that accurate anymore because things have really changed. And it's like averaging over the whole year, you know. I don't really care how my link is over the course of the whole year. I want to know what it is. Like, you know, when does it go down?
Yeah, what's the worst?
Yeah, and so this calculator will tell you.
I dropped the PDF of what I was looking at in our Slack channel on the podcast Slack channel.
Okay.
You can take a look at it. I just did it with 3 kilometers, and you can actually get a full 10 gigs out of that. 99% of the time, and then 99.9% of the time, it's saying about 5 gigs.
Now, is that 99% even?
I don't. You look at. I'll save this one, and you can look at it too.
It's
not 99% even. It's quite a bit of downtime.
Yeah.
At let me see. Yeah, at 2,000 meters, we're looking at. Freaking washed out thing. Yeah, it's even that 3.9s. It'll do the full 10 gig at 3.9s.
Okay.
It looks like that link doesn't ever achieve 5.9s.
Is there any cost estimate on this stuff?
That's with the 1 foot dish as well.
Oh, okay. So you could go up to a 2 foot dish and
yeah. Yep. I'll do that one now, and I'll save that in the channel for you guys to take a look.
Nice. It's interesting. Any idea of what a full link would cost?
This is
price wise.
It's about $10,000 a link.
Well, that's not bad.
Yep.
Which is actually pretty good because that's, you know, $1 per megabit for the link, so that's getting a 500 meg link for $500. It would be the same, you know, $1 per megabit, and you're not going to get the same quality of link, you know, at 500 megs for $500 as you are for 10,000 megs at $10,000.
80, 70, is that licensed range?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's a pseudo, like, you know, you get like a nationwide license, and then you like register each link, I believe is how that works.
Well, when you do it with Siklu registers it, and it's under them. They have the nationwide thing. So they have all the registrations. You do it that way. Nothing stopping you from doing it on your own, but...
Yeah, it's I believe Micronet's website, you can generate both Excel sheets and a KMZ of all of the 70, 80 gig links in a given, you know, search area. So then, you know, on the KMZ, you know, then you can throw it up into Google Earth and see, you know, who else has a link in your area. Obviously, most areas aren't going to have a lot. I think Indy has like 5 or 10 within like 100 miles of Indianapolis. Whereas in my area, I've got like 5 per building.
Well, and the beam widths are so tight that you can get by with a whole lot more than what people are used to with licensed as well.
Oh yeah. On those 2 foot dishes, that 10 gig radio will do it will still do the full 10 gig at 3.5 nines. 4 nines, it's doing 8 gigs. So, you know, it's, you know, most of the time you're gonna get, you know, was it other than 52 minutes a year, you're gonna get over 8 gigs of throughput on it. That's pretty good.
Interesting. All right. So, you guys beat this one to death. You ready to move on? Yeah, good. Good deal.
Sure.
All right, so something that was more...
Quick tangent off of that. Yeah, you know, I had mentioned my calculator. I was playing around comparing different radios in different bands when I made it. And it was surprising to see that at... I think I had like an 1800 meter link. So similar to what Justin's 80 gig is at, I compared what an IgniteNet 42 dB antenna would be like compared to an AirFiber 24. And, you know, you would think that 60 gigahertz at that range is going to be terrible. And up until, I believe, half an inch per hour of rain, it's actually a better connection than the 24. Once you exceed half inch of rain per hour, you know, logic, you know, flips back to the other side, to the you know, air fiber, you know, holding it. But it just kind of blew my mind that something that high a frequency and that cheap is still going to hold out, you know, better for a certain amount of time.
The WAP 60s, we've got a bunch of those deployed now, and we have some deployed much further than 100 meters, and they work great. My only complaint is that they come with hard-coded passwords in them when you buy the match pair, so you have to keep track of that stuff. If they ever get factory reset, only don't have the password, the only way to get past it is net install the thing.
That's interesting. I didn't think about factory default. Going back to actually having that password.
Yeah,
I just assumed if you factory defaulted, it would be no password. It actually goes back
to having the thing,
password.
And it has the password in it. The password's hard-coded in it, just like the factory config on it. So what I did was I'd net install it and do install a new default config, and the only thing in there literally is that system identity is set to unconfigured. There's no password on the username or anything. So
it's so basically just blanking it out.
I don't have to worry about it.
Nice.
Yeah, which I guess they, I was thinking they did that to kind of help keep out some of the, IT newbies. They're just throwing things up.
This is IT newbie heaven, man. It's so easy to put these things up. Like,
yeah,
there's like no alignment at all. You just general direction and you got a link and it works. And it's been pretty reliable and pretty fast.
Are you running the newest RCs or are you just running what came shipped?
641 stuff, whatever is latest 641. Okay. I haven't actually upgraded any of them since.
Yeah, I heard somebody say that, what did they tell me? They said every time a new RC comes out, give it a try because they're making improvements much constantly on those WAP 60s.
If any indication on how the WAP 60s work, the LHG 60s are going to blow it out of the water. I mean, can't wait.
Yeah, I have no idea when those things are actually supposed to hit the market or whatever. I know they were announced a million years ago.
They were supposed to hit market last year, so we'll see. I suppose that the coming months, the EU and the US Mumby, hopefully will get some more details.
I'll get noticed. I'll get noticed when they get FCC certified, so we'll at least have that much, knowing when they're coming.
Yeah.
Most of the time, they're coming within a month or so after certification, so.
All right, very cool. All right, a quick rant, quick diatribe, just to see what you guys think, weigh in on it. Something I can sort of appreciate is I've been getting a lot of work lately, a lot of design work for people that are going with VARs, value-added reseller, right? So what does that basically mean? A VAR is going to come in and they'll do a design for you, and they'll sell you the hardware. Something, and I'm not saying this is devious or mischievous in any way, but a lot of times a VAR's number one job is to sell you equipment, right? So they're helping you come up with a design and all that stuff, but I can't think of a single instance, a single scenario where I've been brought in prior or after that's happened where I wouldn't have cut out a huge equipment purchase. And again, I never want to assume the worst of people, that they're being purposely obtuse about why somebody needs equipment. There's been a couple of instances where I said, well, why do you have this thing? I'm not sure. They told me I needed this, so we bought this. And it seems like just recently one of these guys probably would have saved somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 grand had they just talked to somebody that wasn't necessarily trying to sell them hardware. Another one, they were getting pushed really hard to put a firewall in front of their ISP, right? Which is, I'm not saying that's terrible. I just don't know anybody that actually does that, right? There's a lot of negatives associated with that. And to that end, it was one firewall, so single point of failure. But just very expensive hardware installed. So I would say find a consultant, find a friend, find anybody, find many people that will give you a second opinion on whether you need to make all these equipment purchases or not. Hopefully somebody that you can trust. Sometimes a lot of the people listening to this are new WISPs, right? And they don't have that sort of safety net, of somebody they can trust in the industry to go and find somebody to help assist them with that. But give me a call, look on the consultant list, find somebody that's not actually a hardware vendor necessarily. And I'm not saying it's terrible, and I'm not saying that everybody has a bad experience. I'm just saying the amount of money people generally pay me, they'll save probably five times that by not buying a superfluous piece of equipment that they didn't actually need. So just kind of putting that out there. There's a lot of different ways to engineer a network. I see Mike smiling. There's so many different ways of skinning this cat. And absolutely, you could buy a Ferrari and drive it to the end of your driveway to check your mailbox, but you probably don't need it. So maybe ask somebody. That's the end of my diatribe on that. I'll just see what you guys think about that.
Well, that's why I never, you know, for my company, I never wanted to become a hardware reseller. Because you fall into the trap of, well, all these different companies run these behind the scenes promotions. Hey, if you as the distributor, hey, if you sell so many of this widget this month, you know, you'll get a free trip, or we'll give you a bonus, or it's all multi-level marketing type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they've learned from these guys.
Yeah.
So it incentivizes the distributor to say, well, we'll push this product a little more this month.
Yeah.
So you got a little of that going on. And then you also have the the vendor that says, well, if you go with our total solution, you need this and this, and you might not necessarily need all of that. Yeah, it might be a good solution because you're doing the total package, but if you look at as an overall solution, there might be parts of that package that aren't necessarily good pieces. There's been tons of vendors over the years. I can think of a certain billing vendor. They had they still have a very good billing product, but they had this drop-in box. So you put this box on the network, and the box was supposed to do all this magic stuff. Well, the box was kind of a failure, and they went away from the box, and now no one really uses this box. And they pushed it for quite a while, and it wasn't good. So you get that kind of thing, and someone with a fresh perspective comes in and says, well, why are you doing that? Well, they told me to do that. Well, okay, let's look at your design. Do you really need that?
Yeah. And these guys you're talking to, they have quotas, right? I'm sure there's a tremendous amount of pressure on them to move gear, right? And so for good or for bad, maybe that's going to make them make some poor decisions. I don't want to talk bad about anybody. And another thing I would definitely steer people away from is, and it kind of clicked in my head when you were saying it, is that the total package solution. I've heard of a couple of VAR/consultants that are doing this thing where you sign a contract, an exclusive contract with them, and you're the only one that can sell them equipment. Yep. And I've heard some horror stories coming out of that. When you're locked in and you can't price shop, you can't get outside help. You want to bring up a new micro pop, they're going to make you buy, from what I've heard, a piece of sick glue gear that can do, a couple of gigs. And this is a site that's only going to have maybe 20 customers out in the sticks, but you're still going to have to buy their top of the line gear, mm-hmm. which they're getting the margin off of. Right. So it's, be very wary of somebody that's forcing you. And I've heard in some situations like that, the person basically just scuttles that ISP and then starts up a whole new one with a new LLC and a new name, everything, just so that they can get out from underneath those contracts. And that's insane that you'd have to go to those links just to, keep your business afloat because of the theoretically promised margins that you're going to get and the promised number of customers you're going to be able to turn up. And that doesn't come to fruition. And you have this huge bill coming from these guys and you just can't survive. So I don't want anybody to set themselves up for failure. So be very cautious with those sorts of scenarios. Mm.
For the low, low price of $8 a month, you can become a Debellers with a patron Slack subscriber and you can ask us all these questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not saying any of us have time to sink hours and hours. Hey, we're good guys. We're nice guys. We love answering quick questions, but I doubt we're going to sink hours in for free. But, definitely if you have a quick question, there's a whole lot of differing opinions and everybody's, it's like, what do they say? It's like assholes. Everybody's got one. And we're ready for you to take a look at ours. Take that for what that is. Yeah, everybody wants to give their opinion for sure. And it's great. I love it. So you're going to get a lot of different viewpoints. What I like about it, too, is we're fostering kind of a very welcoming, open environment. Doesn't matter what your skill level is. There's going to be some names in the Slack that you recognize from the forums, not just from this. And they're there to help you guys along. You know, they're learning just as much as you are along the way. And I know some different forums, and it's in every forum. There's going to be guys in there that are a bit cancerous, and we're trying to keep that out of this, right?
Just that's why Wilson's not in there.
That's why we only let Mike have so many comments per day. No, it's just, you know, trying to keep it a welcoming environment, because I know before this has happened to me personally, I've sort of grown past it. I kind of don't give a crap anymore what people think. But I used to think, man, this guy really knows his stuff. I can't ask this stupid question because he'll think I'm stupid. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want everybody to just jump on my ass because I asked such a dumb question. That's you know, that's not here, which I really like. But mostly we've got a lot of really high-level guys in whatever they do, which is awesome. I love that. For me personally, just because I have this huge pool of people I can tap to ask questions.
Back on your original diatribe here, mm-hmm. I remember Packet Pushers talking about this sometime in the past few months. That same sort of thing of...
Really?
Of people buying things that they just don't need. Or no, it was the Packet Pushers or it was Network Collective. One of them was talking about, you know, clients that, you know, get conned in, you know, one form or another of buying stuff that they don't need. And you just look at it like, what are you going to do with this box now? Like, it's sitting there.
Yeah. Well, it's just funny because... I don't know. Like, I do some university work, and I work with those guys a lot, and they have these budgets, and they got to get rid of them. So it's like, we can buy all this just crap at the end of the year, or we'll buy everybody brand new Herman Miller chairs. You know what I mean? It's like, if we don't spend this money, then they don't give it to us next year. They actually deduct how much we're going to get. You know, I mean, it goes bound by percentage, X percentage or whatever. So they have to get rid of it. So in those scenarios, I guess, you know, buying crap for the sake of buying crap is fine, but when generally when you're a wisp, a lot of those guys are, you know, living hand to mouth, so you gotta, you know, if it's the difference between making payroll that month or buying this new gear, yeah, I definitely see an advantage to not doing that. I'm staying very cool on that one. That one's one I get somewhat heated about. I don't like people being taken advantage of. I'm not a big fan of that. So I'll leave it right there.
You know, when I come into a situation like that, it always makes me, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make some people you can tell they just, well, I just bought this because I was told to buy this, and you don't want to go and say, you got taken, dude. You know, you bought an 11 gigahertz backhaul to go, you know, 2 miles to service 10 customers, and that's probably all you're ever going to service. And, yeah, you know, did you need that 11 gigahertz backhaul? And, well, you know, that's, you know, it's like, so, okay, let's make the best of what you have. And so it becomes a, you know, it becomes a philosophical debate at that point.
Yeah.
So,
well, sometimes too, it'll be, hey, buy this specialized appliance that's very expensive.
Yeah.
With the customer not realizing that the routers they have are already capable of doing that. You know, yeah, it's just they were never
told.
Sounds
like Power Code, their BMU thing or whatever.
Their BMU that they put on the edge. Yeah, because that does rate limiting and stuff. I'm talking about, for example, this one guy bought an appliance that was supposed to put in some quality of service and then all of the rate limits for the customers, right? And they're going to do PPPoE, so why not just have that be a radius attribute that passes over to your PPPoE server, and then Bob's your uncle, you've got a rate limit for your customer right there. So it's just, it's things like that that drive me crazy. Let's get off this before I get salty and toasty. Because, just ask for help. Something new that I wanted to try out is a challenge every week, right? So the idea here is
Tide Pods.
Tide Pods. Yeah. It's like millennial sushi. You got to eat it with chopsticks. Not that I'm knocking millennials. Let's see. So the challenge, come up with something. Doesn't necessarily have to be technology super related or WISP related or ISP related. It could just be something that's interesting that maybe grows us as a person. I want people on the podcast to participate. If they will, you've got 2 weeks to do whatever this thing happens to be. Can't be that difficult to get that done. And I would love our listeners to participate as well. So we have a Google Doc started with challenges in here. And if you're a patron subscriber, you actually have right access to this thing. So you can throw in your ideas in here as well. And if we pick yours, you got your name on here so you can get credit for it. Unless I guess you want to leave your name off, that's fine. So far, we've got about 10 entries, which is more than I thought we'd have right off the bat.
I got plenty of ideas.
they don't exist. Bad. Put them on the... Yeah, I see your idea in there. I'm about to strike through it. I thought we'll discuss on this one really quick and figure out which challenge we're going to do. And then next week, after we do said challenge or report back, maybe record in kind of a little quick after show that's patron only, where we discuss whatever the challenge happens to be and then announce it away. Something like that. Let's see how it goes. So on the list now, we've got do some form of home automation. This is actually mine. I've done tons of Arduino microcontroller stuff. I like controlling the real world with computers, but I've never actually branched out to doing anything home automation. And that could be, I think that's open for interpretation. It could be, yeah, like do one of your little, I don't know. Does that count? Like if you order,
you could program it to do whatever you want.
All right. Well, I mean, I was going to say like even an Alexa or, a Google Home, I guess that's home automation-ish, right? I don't know. Turn on a light switch or something, you know, through, I don't know, anything with an app. I don't know. That was sort of one I threw out there. I'm going to skip over what Mike put on his email all your tower equipment vendors and ask them to put SFPs in the radio. You're an idiot. Mike put implement.
Oh, speaking of turning on a power switch, our power just came back.
Booyah. Perfect timing.
Couldn't you have said that earlier?
So it's like your power company was it needed to say, Alexa, turn on the light.
Yeah.
That's all it was. Let's see. Josh said, say three nice things about a vendor you've bashed, which I think is funny. Here's one that I thought was particularly interesting. Admit three things tech related that you know nothing or next to nothing about. That one kind of terrifies me because part of my personality used to be I had to be the guy that knows everything. I'm past that now, but it still kind of like claws at me a little bit. I said give some honest, positive feedback to your employees, not just negative, right? So like make a point to talk to your guys. I think we all get into a rut, you know, and like the guys that do well, we forget about them, right? Who are we worrying about? We're worrying about the guys that are always screwing up and we're always focusing on them. So sometimes we forget to throw an attaboy at them, you know? Another one I came up with, which I firmly believe in, is for everybody, just give it a swing, do a weekly one-on-one with your direct employees. And that's like 30 minutes where you just sit down and they talk. And when they're done, then you get a chance to talk. If they eat up the whole 30 minutes, that's fine, right? Because I think that's actually super important. Let's see.
Mike had somebody say the pig behind him. I'm looking around who I can talk to here. I think I've got some inanimate objects I can talk to.
We don't all have direct employees. I get it. Help one non-tech person, small business owner, think through them using tech to improve, expand their business this quarter. That's interesting. Let's see. Set up and populate an internal wiki for documentation. Use Zapier to automate some part of your business internal workflow. You know, if then this. Yeah, whatever it is. Sorry. And then also, shut up, Miller. Use an Arduino to monitor some part of your WISP infrastructure. Or if you guys have anything else that you want to throw out, Do you have any ideas? What would you like to do for the challenge? And everybody on here is capable of participating in the challenge. I'm looking at you, Miller. I'm looking at you, Mike. Lazy bastards.
We actually have to do something, or is this yes. just make a plan?
No. We're picking the thing that we're going to do, and then you have to execute it before the next podcast. And be ready to talk about it. It doesn't have to, I mean, you don't have to, like, have every switch in your house automated or anything like that. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, just pick a thing and give it a little try.
I got a garage taste. Door opener that's Wi-Fi connected.
I guess that would count.
Open it from this.
And you could talk about your experience with said device. Yeah. Do you guys want to try some form of home automation? I've never done anything, and Andrew Cox was kind enough to gift me some stuff, and it's still sitting in the box that it came in, and this would be a good excuse for me to actually put it into use.
Yeah, I got several Alexa things I've ordered. I got a bunch of X10 in the house that needs to go away.
What's the new hotness? Like the Z-Wave or something?
Z-Wave's kind of the the standard. It was the kind of the X10 replacement with its hub and stuff like that. That was kind of the what a lot of people went to after X10. Now there's the Alexa-enabled stuff. LifeMaster has one. Tom's Guide. I always like Tom's Guide. He's got a really nice write-up on Alexa-compatible devices that I read not too long ago, and I ordered some things from there.
All right, nice. All right, we'll make that the challenge. Do some form of home automation, and that includes all of you listeners, especially if you've never done one. That's kind of the boat I'm in. Thankfully, somebody's already taken the figure out what you're going to get part, and I'll just use some of the stuff that Andrew said. It's right. I can see it. It's right back there in a box on the floor. So I'll do that. And loose, open for interpretation. Do what you can. This includes Slovakians. I know you're there. Do you guys have anything else? You ready to stick a fork in it?
I wanted to mention the whole changing your website to HTTPS stuff. Everybody, man. You know, everybody who has a website basically has till June, is it June 2018? It's either June or July. You need to have your website properly HTTPS enabled, or you're not going to show up in page rankings. Cloudflare's going to dump you. Google's going to mark you as unsecure. You're going to get the warning, this is an unsecure site, whether you have a valid certificate or not. So if you got a, you know, if you got a HTTP site now, come June, Google's going to mark you as an unsecure site. If you don't have an SSL certificate for it.
Sure. Yeah. But just for generic stuff, like, not even talking contact forms or anything. It's just if your site isn't completely SSL enabled.
Correct.
Which I think is a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, it's pretty crappy.
I am completely against the encrypt everything movement. There's zero need for it.
Yes.
I don't have anything on any of my websites that anybody needs it to be encrypted for.
Yeah. I mean, if you're Joe Smo out there and you got a website, there's no reason you need a secure certificate.
But Google knows best, so that's what everybody has to do.
Yep. Right. With there's a version of Google Chrome coming that once that Google Chrome's out there, it will say, you know, the big bad scary, this is an insecure website, you must click here to continue. You know, you got to click two or three times to go to the website. That'll happen on any website that's not SSL enabled.
Have you run into the situation where you have an old device and you can no longer manage it because the SSL cert on it is so old that these ciphers Google won't even show it.
Yeah.
I think like old APC web cards were like that and some other things I've run across. It's just like, God.
Yeah, and what's so annoying is that like they don't include any like, you know, power user, you know, administrator level functions to re-enable that. It's like, no, like, you know, I understand keeping Joe Schmo consumer away from those things because they don't know what they're getting into, but, you know, there should be some sort of, you know, multi-factor, you know, yes, I agree, I want this turned to, you know, turned back on.
Yeah, give me a power user function.
So I think there is two sides to this. Like, there should definitely be options and power user. If I want to go somewhere, they shouldn't restrict me to go somewhere. Yes, there should be multiple checkboxes and whatever. But on the other side, like, today, to actually get a website that's fully encrypted and with free certificates and everything is extremely easy. If you are hosting it on your own, you have Let's Encrypt, which... I mean, it's honestly, it's a one-liner to use it at this point. It's extremely easy. And another part of this debate is, even if you are hosting a website, it's much better for a multitude of reasons to have it hosted somewhere. Like Amazon AVS makes it literally 3 clicks to host a fully encrypted and geocached website with CloudFront. Then you have like a myriad of services which will do that for you. And I'm not talking about just, you know, secure it, but completely host and secure it. So I think on one hand, it has gotten easier than ever to actually properly have a fully encrypted website. But on the other hand, you know, Chrome should never completely ban you from accessing something you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's easy, you know, like you say, with Let's Encrypt, you know, especially with Let's Encrypt and VirtualMin, you know, if you're doing hosting yourself, you know, it's a couple clicks and it phones home and you got an SSL cert that, you know, renews every 30, 60 days, whatever it is, and you kind of forget about it.
Or like, you know, something like, you know, Cloudflare, you know, I have my websites are, you know, Cloudflare accelerated, so you know it's in all of their, you know on their free service, you know, any of the CDN nodes that they use for their free service, you know, my website serves out of there, and it's just a checkbox, you know, use SSL, okay, that's fine. So you know, I take it, you know, I didn't do the SSL at first because I saw no need to, and then it was about a year ago, I think Google made some hint about, you know, PageRank relating to SSL, so I did it then. Like, not that you wouldn't show up, but that, you know, there'd be a slightly better score to somebody that was. So I did that. Quick tangent, you know, I talked about these, you know, guys. Quick mention earlier. There's another podcast network collective. It seems like more like network consultant type people mostly. But they had one episode, the impact of increasing encrypted traffic. And they talk about, for, you know, businesses, enterprises, you know, information security type stuff, you know, to have, you know, IP protection, not, you know, internet protocol, but intellectual property, you know, monitoring, you know, people emailing away, you know, trade secrets and, you know, design, you know, new product design stuff and whatnot. You know, they have to, you know, watch all of, you know, those types of companies watch all of your traffic, and the amount of money they have to spend on boxes to completely, you know, man in the middle everything now, and you know, not just that, but that because now everything is being encrypted, you know, they have to look at everything before, which it's been 2 months since I heard the episode, so I could be greatly slaughtering their points, but you know, back in the day, you know, things that were encrypted were, you know, bank statements and, you know, purchases and things, and those things should be encrypted, and so companies didn't break the encryption on those things because it was, you know, it was encrypted for a reason, but now everything's encrypted, so they just decrypt everything, you know.
Yeah, I actually went to a lunch and learn this week hosted by the FBI, and they were talking about intellectual property protection was one of the things they were discussing, and they were saying that it's actually somewhat difficult to prosecute on some of that stuff. They said you have to be taking reasonable efforts, right? That's supposedly some legal language. That's reasonable efforts. What are reasonable efforts? So anything you want to protect, you have to segment off. You know, you have to take measures like passwords expire. You have to have process and procedures associated with that stuff. And you have to make sure that you're following it. You have to be able to prove that you're following it. You know, they said most of IP theft comes from the trusted insider. So in organizations, especially, so one of our sister companies does research and development for government grants and things like that. You know, a scientist will be working on something, but if you silo that scientist, you know, and they can't talk to other scientists about what they're working on, there's a lot that's lost in there. You know, I mean, somebody else could have been working on something for years that could positively impact that project instantly, right? But if you share that information, well, then you open yourself up to these risks, right? So now this trusted insider has access to things that's not necessarily in their purview. So if they copy all of that stuff because it's something that they have been given access to, that's not considered attempted escalation of privileges or anything like that. You gave them access to this information. So all that stuff just gets so sticky and convoluted, and you know, how do you actually protect yourself from things like that? It's pretty hairy these days to try and do that stuff. I know Thomas has got a big piece of IP he's working on protecting, but all of your programs are inside, right? So say you had an outside resource, how do you go about protecting yourself from those sorts of things? You know, what's funny is I never thought the FBI would. So if somebody tries to steal my intellectual property, the FBI here in the U.S. will actually attempt to prosecute on my behalf because they see it as, what did they call it? It's like the strength of your economy is part of the strength of the nation as a whole. So if they help to protect my patents and my, you know, my intellectual property that nobody else has, then they're in turn helping out the entire country. So they will actually prosecute on your behalf. I never knew that was a thing. So if you get like hit with ransomware and stuff like that, you're theoretically supposed to be able to call your FBI, your local FBI agent. They're supposed to help you out. Do you guys know that stuff?
I know they had a, you know, kind of a cybersecurity that would help you out more than I had a crime. You know, they would help you out if you had a breach or something, because they're looking for, hey, this probably happened to somebody else.
Yeah.
So they're looking at it from that perspective.
They had some quote, and I'm going to butcher this, but they said basically all of the information, all of the intellectual property that China's been exfiltrating from the U.S. recently, that, what did they say? It's the largest transfer of, like, intellectual wealth in the history of mankind, like all the theft that's been happening. I mean, they say that they've been stealing stuff like paint formulas. I think DuPont had a bunch of paint formulas stolen by China, you know, and then genetic seed information has been stolen, and, you know, just all kinds of crazy stuff like that. All these other countries stealing our tricks. I don't know. That's a tangent.
Oh yeah, one other, you know, thing that they mentioned in that other cast was, you know, if you can't afford the box to do man in the middle on everything, which, you know, in an enterprise environment is easier to do, because, you know, then you can install, you know, your CA certificate, you know, into their device, you know, because it's your device, so you own it. Yeah. So that, you know, so then, other than places like Google and whatnot that do, was it HSTS, where, you know, the browser actually knows which is the real certificate, you know, not just, you know, following, you know, CA chains and whatnot. But other than that, you know, that gets pretty heavy duty because you have to decrypt everything and then re-encrypt it as it's leaving. So what, you know, kind of some tactics people are left to do then is basically collecting flow data and trying to observe patterns and then trying to determine what's a good pattern and what's not a good pattern. You know, blatantly obvious, you know, Bob works 9 to 5, you know, 5 days a week, and all of a sudden, you know, Sunday morning at 3 a.m., Bob's PC downloads 50 gigs from the file server, and then 50 gigs goes out from his PC to, you know, some IP in China. That's obviously bad. But how do you define the threshold without seeing the actual content? What, you know, what is bad and what's not bad? So that's kind of a whole new market of, you know, behavioral heuristics, you know, for employees' data usage of what's normal for this employee, what's not normal for this employee, and alarming on that.
Sounds like something AI could be used to, you know, find that kind of stuff and identify it.
It,
see that soon, probably.
Stuff I don't know anything about.
Drop Bob down a hole.
Yeah, it's all tricky. All that stuff's tricky. Trying to protect yourself, right? And it's sometimes it feels like diminishing returns, right? It costs a lot of money to do that sort of thing. And not only money, but time and employees. And that's a pretty big investment. So at some point, you got to say, you know, how much is enough?
Which now circles back to Steve and Josh's our rant about security practices and what's good enough.
Yeah. Because, I mean, theoretically, I've read some stuff before that says the monetary impact of a breach to companies really isn't nearly as big as you think it probably is. And, you know, if you think a company's going to get a breach and that's going to somehow make customers not go there, it's just, that's not the case. You know, Home Depot's
still shopping at Target, so.
Yeah. Target got hit. Home Depot got hit. Everybody still goes there like crazy. There was no noticeable dip in their revenue.
But you know, I would say that it's probably inverse proportional to company size. You know, somebody huge like Target, they're gonna have very little, loss, which actually might be made up for by other people now coming to Target because they were stolen, but because, you know, lines are shorter now or something, so, you know, that may offset. But, you know, some small engineering company that, you know, there's 6 employees and, you know, all of their, you know, engineering project, you know, details are leaked or somehow, they have a much smaller customer audience, you know, so one or two of them get pissed off and leave, that's a big impact on the company.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is this FBI agent was talking about how, actually he was a prosecutor for like cyber crimes and stuff like that. And he was saying that, one of the bigger targets nowadays are law firms. He said, because like these big, companies, they have this complex security system in place, right? All of these locks, these safety measures, these checks. But when they have to do litigation for some sort of reason, they have to turn over all of this evidence, right? So it's very specific stuff. It's very specific information over the law firms. And so why try and fight your way in there when you can just come in through a law firm? He was talking about a Chinese syndicate that wanted to buy this potash company, I think in Canada. And so there were like 4 other buyers and they were all somewhere in Canada. So they just got hacked. They hacked all the law firms, so they knew how much everybody was bidding, what offers they were making. I mean, they basically had the keys to the kingdom there, because all of their representation had exactly how much they were willing to give, you know, what margins they were looking. So they, I guess at some point that got out before the deal happened. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to win when you are playing poker and you see everybody's cards beforehand. So it's crazy. How far can you go down that rabbit hole? I don't know. Do you guys have anything else on this? You want to close it out? We're right at the hour mark.
I'm good.
See you at Whisper right. America.
Yeah, yeah. So we got Justin Miller. I assume you're going.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I fly out tomorrow at 6.
At Justin Wilson, myself, from the Brothers Wisp is going. There's a couple Facebook groups that have popped up for people that are going to the show for, you know, discussions at the show and, you know, arranging meetups and stuff. Hit us up if you want to know where that group is. We'll send you an invite to it.
Very cool. All right, let's close it out official like. Before I forget, this episode was brought to you again by our lovely sponsor, Sonar, scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system. Learn more at sonar.software. God, I'm so good at that. No, go drop them a look. If you like them, be sure to tell them we sent them your way. For me, always end with me. We'll go, Thomas, if people want to find you, how do they do that?
Get a flashlight.
No, the power is back on, so hey. But yeah, just Google for me. I'm easy to find, all the social networks, all the everything. Unimusnet, that's probably the easiest and fastest. And I will be at the European MOM in Berlin, and then at the US MOM as well, which is all next month. So if anybody is at the MOM, come and say hi.
Yeah, go to unimus.net, buy a software. Justin Wilson, if people want to find you out on the internet, how do they go about that?
J2SW.com, everything me.
Booyah, it's even nudes. Miller, if people want to find you on the internet, how do they do that?
The Brothers Wisp Slack channel, Little Brothers Slack
channel. Now, come on, pimp that blog, what do you got?
ScienceStatic.net.
There you go.
I haven't done anything on there in a while. So.
It doesn't matter. It's still a good resource. Mikey, how do people get a hold of you? Oof.
You're not lying, Miller. It's been almost 2 years.
Yeah, been busy.
Been busy not posting.
I think I've said the same or similar thing in the past few shows. I'm busy, so leave me alone.
All right. And that's his way of saying going to Facebook.com/TheBrothersWisp. That's where you're going to find Mike. All of the juicy tidbits, all the people answering your stuff, that's all him. If you want to find me, you can hit me at GregSoul.com or just Greg@GregSoul.com. That's an easy email. I'd love to holler at you cats about doing all the things with the stuff. I know somebody had asked about that software backend thing that I'm working on. My partner and I, we're calling in a hired gun. Somebody you guys may have heard of, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe if you were in the Slack channel, you would know this cat. So we're actually pulling in some hired help. I like to say he's going to help us make the cake and we're going to frost it. So he's going to do some of the heavy lifting and help us get some of this stuff done. So hopefully we'll have something very soon. Accelerated timeline. I love it. If you guys have any questions or comments, drop them in either Facebook or contact us at The Brothers Wish if you're an email kind of cat. Other than that, questions, comments, please keep them coming. We love to interact. If you guys have any interesting challenges for us, send them our way. Please participate in the challenge. I want to see what everybody comes up with. I guess that's it for us. Thanks,
quick question
everybody.
On the Hurry challenges.
Up. Hurry.
How do we, so if our audience wishes to participate in them as well, what should they do with their, whatever it is that your challenge of the week that we've done,
I'd say tweet at us, but I don't do the Twitters.
Put it on our Facebook.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. Yeah. Put your results in there. Put them in a little bit before the next cast, which happens every other Saturday. So today's the March 3rd. It'll be the 10th. No. What was that? 17th?
3 plus 14.
Yeah. I said 17. It'll be 17. Do the 17. So the morning of the 17th or the 16th, something like that, put some stuff up there or email us about it. Or if you've got some really good stuff, do it before and we'll get you on the show and let you talk about it. All right. Thanks, everybody.